All right, good afternoon. How's everybody doing? Yeah? Pretty cool stuff this week so far. I know it's only day one and a half. It's been pretty nuts. Had a lot of fun yesterday in the keynote, as well as session after session yesterday. So thank you all very much for being here. And the reaction from you and talking with analysts and press and customers and stuff like that. It's been amazing to hear just the last day and a half. Everyone seems to just be shocked at the capabilities and technologies and the amount of engineering prowess we're bringing to System Center 2012 R2 and Windows Server 2012 R2. So I'm very proud and I'm very thrilled to see that you guys are, everyone seems to be extremely positive to the new key capabilities and technologies we're bringing. So this is MDC B375. This is Microsoft Cloud Fast Track. My name is Jeff Woolsey. I'm a principal program manager in the Windows Server and Cloud Division. I've had the pleasure of working on virtualization now for over 15 years, 10 at Microsoft. And before I was at Microsoft, I worked at a small startup down in California. Way back when, people wanted to run DOS and Windows 3.1 on their Apple Power Mac 6100, 7100, and 8100, for those of you who remember that. So back then, I actually worked on virtual PC for Mac, which was actually a lot more difficult in many ways because it was not only virtualization, but it was binary translation as well, PowerPC to x86 and back again. So that's a lot more, very difficult. So we did that and been working on then virtual server and, of course, many releases of Hyper-V. And so now I'm thrilled to say that private cloud and cloud is where I live and breathe, and I work across server to do that. Also, I have Lavanya Krishnan today, and she's going to co-present today with on the Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track. So first thing I want to do really quickly is kind of, again, you may or may not have seen this slide, and if there's anything, I hope you're getting sick and tired of this slide, honestly, because it means we're actually getting our message across. I've had way too many people over the last year say, I don't think I understand what Microsoft's doing in cloud, and I want to be extremely crystal clear here. There's no ambiguity. This is exactly what our North Star is. This is exactly what our vision is. And this is how we think about cloud. And first of all, we think of that as a three-tiered stool, three-legged stool here. And it starts with private. Okay? And as someone who's been working on virtualization for so long, a lot of people come up and ask me, oh, I'm running a virtualization platform. Does that mean I have cloud? Well, maybe it does. It means you have the makings of cloud. It does not mean you have cloud. Okay? Let's be very clear, and as someone who's watched this happen over my life, let me tell you how we've kind of gotten here. In the 90s, you know, and in the first part of the aught years, essentially what was happening, we were buying servers like crazy. Again, I was at a small startup. We reached a point where we probably had at least a server for every person in the company. Guess what? Servers are easy to set up. They're inexpensive. They're really cool. Great. And in fact, we were continuing to buy those as we got into the aught years. People were still buying servers at a crazy rate. And I talked to folks in large financials and verticals and the Chicago high-rises and the New York Wall Street, and they'd say, Jeff, I have as much budget to buy as many servers as I want. That's not a problem. I have no place to put them and no power to power them with. That's my problem. For me to get more servers, I have to go to the city and request an upgrade on the grid. That's the type of problem we're running into. So virtualization for consolidation was an outgrowth of this. It's like, look, let's take 10 or 15 servers, let's virtualize them. Guess what? And I'm running 10 times more workloads on a single server. Awesome. That was great. That's virtualization for consolidation. That is spectacular. There's nothing wrong with that. That is not cloud. Others are trying to sell that as cloud. It is not. The difference is this. When we did virtualization for consolidation, we basically took those physical machines, we did some sort of conversion or something like that, but basically we had a bunch of physical servers, and guess what? We still manage those virtual machines the same way. We log into the workload into the service, we made some changes on individual servers. That's nice, that's great, that's consolidation. That does not scale. You will not be able to afford all of the IT to be able to log into every little VM and little workload and think at that scale. We run Azure. We run global services. Humans do not log into our servers. At this level of scale, what you need to do is you need to standardize everything, first of all. standardize the hardware. You need compute nodes. You need scale nodes. You need network nodes. You need to standardize your VM templates. You have small, medium, large, extra large. That's it. It's no more one-off VMs here. Yeah, this VM's got 2 gigs of memory. This one's got 2.5 gigs of memory. This has 3 disks attached. This has 8 disks. No. You can keep doing that if you want, but you're not going to get any of the economies of scale. It's about standardization. So when I think about cloud and private cloud, I don't want to define a VM or a server. I want to define a service. I want to be able to say, look, here's an application, and this is a 3-tier application, and guess what? It gets a minimum amount of proc and memory and storage, but if it needs more, it just grows. And guess what? That's exactly what cloud is about. Okay? Cloud is requestable. Cloud is chargeable. Cloud is elastic. Cloud is highly available. If you're not thinking in those terms, you're not thinking cloud. You're still thinking consolidation. So this is very important, and private cloud is about control. I bring this point up all the time because it is so very true. I talk with customers in Canada and Germany, and they tell me, Jeff, I don't care how cool you tell me Azure is. I don't care how cool that stuff is. I have workloads that have to run on Canadian soil in a Canadian data center by a Canadian citizen. So no matter how cool you tell me the Azure stuff is, I'm still going to do my stuff on premises. So are you going to try and argue with me? And my answer is no, I'm not. This is not a technology problem. This is a business requirement. You know what? Let's build you the best private cloud on premises for you. Let's do that. And that's Windows Server and System Center. And I always point out both because it's not just the hypervisor. I understand the hypervisor guys want to sell you that, and every problem is a hypervisor problem. That's baloney. Okay, at the end of the day, it's my workloads, it's my applications, it's my services that are important, and those are the ones I've got to make sure I'm monitoring their health and service. That's why System Center is so critical. If you're running Dynamics, if you're running Exchange, if you're running SharePoint, if you're running Link, guess what? The best way to run those is on the Microsoft hypervisor managed by Microsoft System Center, because guess who wrote the management packs for Exchange, SharePoint, Link, SQL, Dynamics? Those teams. That's who wrote them. The Exchange team knows what you should be monitoring. The SQL team knows what you should be monitoring. So that's why System Center and Windows Server are key to our private cloud. Now, private cloud is about control. Then we have the public cloud. Public cloud is about scale. I want to be able to take an application, use my MSDN account, and guess what? Guess I'm going to make it available in North America. Oh, it works great. Let's make it available in South America. Let's make it available in Europe. Let's make it available in Asia Pacific. Awesome. I can just do that. In fact, let me give you a great example. There's this woman. You may have heard of her. She's kind of popular. Her name is J.K. Rowling. She wrote a couple of books about some guy named Harry Potter. She made a few dollars. J.K. Rowling, as a huge thank you to her customers, her fans, my daughter, huge Harry Potter fan, just read all the books this last year. And J.K. Rowling said, I want to do a huge thank you. She released this thing called Pottermore. It's an online site with interactive videos, interactive content, things that were not in the movies, things that were not in the books, just a huge thank you, and it's awesome. It's this super interactive thing. And guess what? They started on a private cloud. They said, we're going to make this all available as a private cloud. They turned it on. In 2 weeks, 1 billion hits. I don't know how you do capacity planning for this. In 2 weeks, they couldn't take any more users. Okay? When they started to build this, they did one of these, I think that's right. They bought a whole bunch of servers, a whole bunch of storage, a whole bunch of networking, and said, let's go turn it on, and we think that's right. And then in 2 weeks, they couldn't take all the demand. And guess what? They're still adding more to it. So they said, wow, this isn't going to work. We can go and buy some more hardware. We said, yeah, you could do that. Maybe you'll get it right. But you know what? Why don't you just stick this on Azure? And guess what? That's exactly what they did. They said, let's just move this over to Azure. And guess what? They turned it back on, and Azure just goes, boop, 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 just grows. Boop, 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 boop. They released new services. They sent out these announcements to the folks. My daughter got onto this as soon as I told her there was a Pottermore thing, and I get the email. So they release new things. You get an email, and boom, there's a huge demand. And guess what? Azure just scales. They're not buying any new hardware, any new software. Azure just does this elastically. That's cloud. So Azure gives you scale. And we have platform as a service, software as a service, and infrastructure as a service. Azure PaaS, Office 365, software as a service, and we have Azure Virtual Machines, infrastructure as a service. And the reason why I bring this up is because this is really important. Depending on who you talk to, you're going to get a different answer for cloud. If you talk to VMware, they're going to tell you this thing down here, this private cloud, they're going to say, that's cloud. By the way, this hybrid thing that they've announced, nobody knows what it is. I still don't know what it is. If you talk to Salesforce.com, they'll say, no, that's not cloud. They'll say Office 365 or SaaS. You know, SaaS, that's what Salesforce.com will tell you, that's cloud. If you talk to AWS, they'll say, no, both those guys are wrong. AWS will say, no, running VMs up there is the cloud. If you talk to Oracle, well, Oracle has no idea of this, so they'll just make up an answer. But my point being is, we think of this holistically as cloud. All of this is cloud. It's not one little bit here, or one little bit here, or one little bit down here. It's all of it. The important thing is we want you to be able to run where it makes sense to you, for you, for business reasons. It may make sense to do it on-prem. It may make sense to do it in the public cloud or in a service provider. So where a public cloud gives you scale, a service provider gives you customization and reach. I was in Australia last year for the first time ever. Loved it. Never been there before. Turns out most of the people live along the coast for good reason. Boy, the beaches there are awesome. But in the northern central part of Australia, which is literally nothing out there, it's desert, it's the bush, there's a whole bunch of people that are out there doing a whole bunch of mining. There's precious minerals, resources out there, and so they're hiring people, they're paying them, you know, just crazy amounts of money to go live in the middle of nowhere to go mine these precious resources. Well, guess what? There's no connectivity out there. There's no cell phone coverage out there. It's satellite. So guess what? There's a cloud service provider offering services literally in the middle of nowhere. The other thing a service provider gives you, customization. You may say, you know what, I want to run on a specific server and a specific rack, and I want to own the key. That's something we're not going to do in Azure. Okay, but guess what? You may have that relationship. You may already have that co-hosting going on with the service provider, co-location, whatever. You can do that. Go right ahead. And then finally, we think you need to have a consistent platform. That's what the Windows Azure pack is all about. We made the announcement yesterday. Claire showed it yesterday in the keynote. This is really important because guess what? If I go to Azure, what's that UI look like? It's that beautiful, really clean. It's got the blue, white, and the black. It's very crystal clear what's going on. If I go to a service provider, I want that same experience. If you guys are building a private cloud internally, guess what? You want your folks to go in there and say, I want to request a SharePoint, and guess what? It looks like the same thing. You want a consistent experience across all three. If you go up to Salesforce, you get one example. If you go to AWS, you get another example. It's Portal Palooza out there, okay? And you have to train everyone on each one of them. We want to give you one consistent, unified experience wherever it may be, okay? That is how we think about cloud. That is what cloud is to Microsoft. Of course, we have to make sure that we provide awesome development tools like Visual Studio, management. We have System Center on-premises. We have it in the cloud, things like Intune and Advisor and more. Data. Guess what? We've got SQL Server on-premises service providers. We have SQL available in virtual machines as IaaS in Azure or as a SQL service on Azure as well. Identity. Crucial. You guys want to figure out how to do identity or just want to let Active Directory just do what it does best? Why do you think AD is chosen by most of the world? Guess what? You use AD on private cloud, you use AD in service providers, and we have Azure AD already running. Single sign-on. It just works. And then finally, virtualization. And notice the difference here. The other guys will tell you virtualization is the end state. Well, again, when all you sell is a hammer, then every problem looks like a nail. Trust me, I've been working on virtualization a long time. I love it. It's super cool. But it's a part. It's a tenet. It's a technology. It is not the end state. The end state is that. Because what cloud gives you, like I said, it's requestable, it's chargeable, elastic, it's highly available, it's usage-based. And we're going to drive down your costs. That's what it's about. It's about agility. It's about flexibility. So when we think about on-premises versus public clouds, one thing that's very interesting, we've been seeing a lot more of this, is I talk about these tenants of cloud, and I talk to large enterprises. They come in and come to our executive briefing center. I will talk with CXOs all the time, and they'll say, you know, we want this elastic thing. We want this chargeable thing, and, you know, we want all of this stuff. And I said, oh, you want to be a service provider? And they're like, no, I don't want to be that. No. I said, okay, tell me what you want. Well, I want people to be able to request services, and I want my IT to be more elastic and flexible. And I walk through all of that, and they come to the realization, actually, they do want to be a service provider within their own organization. So when we think about on-premises versus public cloud, you can see the paradigm is very similar. Instead of going to my ID department and saying, guys, I need a file server, I need more storage, what I really want them to do is go to a self-service portal and say, hey, I need this amount of storage, or I need a SharePoint solution. Here's a medium-sized SharePoint solution that should give me X, and this is how much I'm going to be charged. And guess what? I just go to a portal, check in, and move along with life. My IT department wants to be focused on the infrastructure. They just want to make sure it just runs and we can drive down the cost, that it's highly available, it's highly resilient, and they provide these plans that your customers internally can focus on. Well, guess what? That's what cloud providers are doing as well. They're building these plans. So there's a whole bunch of synergy here between the two. Now, there are some key differences, especially around security and multi-tenancy, but trust me, that factors in how we deliver these solutions. So a lot of common questions. Number one, how can I get a Microsoft private cloud deployed quickly? How can I build a private cloud with confidence and reduce risk? What if I want to build this myself? I have strategic investments. Look, I work with this OEM partner. I work with this OEM partner. I have a great relationship with my hardware guys, my storage guys. Fantastic. Is there a solution from them that I can use that will allow me to go get to this faster? And more fundamentally, I get questions all the time. Jeff, I just want to run 500 VMs. Just tell me, give me the hardware to do that. It sounds like a really simple question. And it sounds like I should just have an answer. I should go, here you go, buy X. That'll give you 500 VMs. But it's really not. And that's why Fast Track is so important. Because we want to provide you turnkey solutions that are ready to go. Really that simple. So we want to help you choose the right solution. And there's a number of different vectors you have to think about. Deployment time. Look, if you want to go do your own custom one and basically do IT the way we've been doing it for the last couple decades, you can go right ahead. Okay, and you can do a lot of customization and do that stuff, and we'll tell you, we'll give you all the architecture and all the diagrams and all the white papers on everything how to do it. There's cloud service providers who'll say, you know what? Just go fire up a VM. In fact, you want to do that on Azure, go right ahead. You can go fire up a VM right now. You want to take advantage of Office 365? You don't need to set up an Exchange server anymore. It's waiting for you. So that's the other end of the solution, where you don't set up anything. There's also this middle ground, which is, no, I do want to do some of this on premises. I still want to maintain that control, but I want it kind of pre-done for me. You figure out the NICs, you figure out the storage, you basically have somebody drop off a rack, turn the thing on, set it up, and say, here you go. That's what I really want. That's what Private Cloud Fast Track's about. So it's about providing that high level of pre-integration, system center, storage, networking, the whole thing, compute, storage, networking, it's all there. It's all included, okay? This means reference architecture. This includes how we think and what are those core tenets behind Fast Track. We're gonna go through that today. What is the end-to-end deployment guide? If you wanna go build it yourself, we've got the end-to-end deployment guide. You can do it yourself. Okay, it's publicly available. Fast Track architecture has been publicly available now. We're up to version 3, all publicly available. Go right ahead and do it. It's all there. But when you go with our solution, a Fast Track solution, it's been validated. We've actually worked with the hardware partner, making sure that it follows all of our engineering tenets. And we have different kinds. We have mandatory tenets. It's like, sorry, you have to have this. For example, high availability is not an option. Sorry, you can't cut a corner there, okay? But some of these other features may be optional. Hey, this is a nice to have, don't really need it, but there's some that are recommended as well, so we'll talk about those. And again, it's about having innovative, turnkey-ready solutions. I just want to drop this off and say, guys, set the thing up, plug in the power, turn it on, and let's show my IT guys where the on switch is and let them go, okay? And it's about minimizing risk. Because we've done all the validation, we've done the testing, we've done the integration, and it's an end-to-end solution. Compute, storage, and networking. So why Fast Track? Speed. Like I said, if you want to go set this up, please, you can go figure out all the hardware you think you need, and you can do your best capacity planning and go right ahead. But if you want something available like shipped to your door, ready to go, agility, that's important. Reduce risk. Again, it's tested end-to-end. That's a nice feature of this. A lot of people say, tell me straight up, Jeff, I'll pay for that. That alone is worth this. And the flexibility and choice. So one of the things we wanted to do is we didn't just want to say, here's one solution and one solution only. We want to provide you choice, and all of our partners allow you to do different things. There's different offerings out there based on different scale, based on different price points, different performance, etc. So that gives you the opportunity to choose what makes sense for you. So redundancy and resiliency is a core tenet, and I wanted to take a moment to kind of walk through this, because I get asked this question all the time about, hey, if I go with a solution like this, how do I know, like, this thing is highly available, right? Well, of course it is. And in fact, let me explain to you what I mean by highly available. So these are some of the key technologies that are all built into Windows Server, for example, that we just take advantage of. We support hardware error architecture, provided the server supports it. But we have physical node redundancy. So for example, we have live migration for planned downtime. We have failover clustering for unplanned downtime. If I walk up to a server, yank out the power cable, guess what? Those VMs automatically restart on other cluster nodes. That's all built in there. I have I/O redundancy. So we have network load balancing and failover with NIC teaming. We have storage multipath I/O for your storage. And we have multi-channel SMB. So based on solution you decide to go with, we have all of your I/O is redundant based on the type of storage I/O you want to do. From an application standpoint, for non-cluster aware applications, so you got some old legacy applications, we've got Hyper-V app monitoring. For highly available applications, we have guest clustering via iSCSI and Fibre Channel. We also have guest teaming of NICs as well within the VM with SRIOV. So again, you're getting multiple layers of resiliency within the VM as well. We're going to go up even higher in the stack. We also have things like Replica, which provides asynchronous replication. And in 2012 R2, we've even made that even more configurable. We also have cluster CSV integration with storage arrays for synchronous replication if you want to go down that path as well. So you can see the entire stack is resilient. Key tenet of what we do, both in Windows Server and Private Cloud, and of course for FastTrack. So from an architectural standpoint, a couple things to think about, some key principles. So again, we think holistically, compute, network, and storage here. Again, it's Windows Server and System Center. You're not going to hear me talk about one without talking about the other. Think of them as one together unit. So principles, pooled resources. Okay, what we want to do is we want to aggregate resources, we want to pool them together, and then we can slice and dice them in software. We want this to be elastic. I want to be able to make changes. I want my applications and services to grow dynamically usage-based based on need. Again, everything is continuously available. That is just a fundamental tenet. If anything goes down, there's something in place to back it up. Whether it's storage, whether it's networking, whether it's an entire node, it's all thought of and a part of the package. It's predictable. The last thing you want is something that looks like this. This is actually something that gets overlooked a lot. You know, people say, predictability allows me to provide a consistent experience, consistent performance experience. Because if you do something that introduces unpredictability, it can have bad effects on other services running in the system. Usage-based, of course. You know, I want to be able to say, look, you know what, you're using a small configuration, you get charged X. You're using a large configuration, you're getting charged X plus 2, whatever that may be. Multi-tenant, of course. Even within a single organization, you may say, look, marketing has this account code, and they get charged, and the test guys, the advertising guys, the sales guys, the admins, the finance guys, okay? And maybe I want to give each one of those the ability to manage their own. So maybe, you know what, I give the advertising team, they have their own pool of resources, and then they can subdivide however they want. Because again, I'm now just providing services. I'm providing cloud infrastructure. So even within a company, this can be a tremendous way for your IT to become a service provider. Of course, security. Everything we do at Microsoft, every new feature we deliver at Microsoft goes through a threat model, goes through a security design review. Every time we introduce a new feature, we have a huge debate as to is it on by default? Is it off by default? Yeah, every little feature. So for example, in Server 2012, we introduced things like Replica. What were the defaults for that? It's secure by default. First of all, it's off. You've got to enable it. If you want to enable it and use it, you have to determine how you want to access it through Kerberos, through certificate. We don't even let you continue going through Replica until you determine those things. It's always smart defaults. So security is always their design principle. Self-service. Like I said, you want to be able to go to a portal and say, you know what, these are the services that I want to be able to provision from the cloud. And of course, partner extensible. One of the things we did in Server 2012 was we wanted to make sure we provided lots of opportunities for partners to plug in. For example, the virtual switch is pluggable. We got folks from Five9, we got folks from Cisco, Inmon, NEC has a programmable OpenFlow switch, so there's a lot of extensibility there. We've got partners that are plugging in from a backup perspective. For example, Symantec has announced first-class support for net backup with Server 2012 Hyper-V, I believe it was today. So lots of opportunity in terms of partners. And the spectrum is, you know, we kind of position it as, look, there's a small, a 2 to 6 host. We kind of think of that as perhaps a branch office. And we've got kind of a fast-track medium, kind of a 6 to 64 host. And on the left side, we kind of think about a cluster in a box, a clustered NAS or SAN. And on the right-hand side, we think about, you know, SAN-based private cloud, scale-out file server. And we'll kind of walk through all of these and show you kind of what these look like. So forgive the eye chart for just a moment, but that's kind of at a high level. And you guys will be able to get all of these slides. You can look at it in further detail. But that's kind of the eye chart of how we think of the small, medium, and large there. So let's start with the small configurations, the design patterns. So cluster in a box and converged NAS and SAN. So the cluster in a box design consideration is actually something, cluster in a box is something we actually introduced last year with Server 2012. And it was something we've been working with the storage partners ever since, and it's been quietly gaining momentum. And in fact, there's cluster in a box sessions this week, but we're actually very excited about this because what we want to do is we want to provide a highly available solution that you can deliver. Imagine delivering it to a bank or a branch office and saying, guess what? Here's an entire cluster literally in a box. It's one unit. And it's highly available. So at least one node and storage is always available. Okay, so you have dual power domains. It's all clustered. It's highly available from a storage perspective and from a networking perspective. It's pre-wired. It actually has internal interconnects between the nodes and the controllers. So today, you're probably used to setting up a cluster. And if you've ever set up, say, you know, a four-node cluster, you buy, you know, blades or you have four racks and you plug them in, you cable them all. This is actually all pre-cabled. It's all inside. You don't have to do anything. It's all set inside. You simply plug the thing in. There you go. So you do get flexibility, too. There are still PCIe slots if you want to add some additional LAN connectivity. There's external SAS parts. So, for example, it comes with direct attach. It comes with, you know, shared SAS. It comes with storage all built in. And if you outgrow it, say you're in a bank, for example, and guess what? You need a little bit more storage. You plug in a JBOD expander. So it's easy, too. So it's one of these, hey, you buy it, you set it, and forget it. And then guess what? If you need more storage, you get an alert, you need some more storage, plug in a JBOD, guess what? You got more storage. And it's designed to work in those, you know, non-data center environments where it's literally, hey, we're going to put this under Joe's desk, okay? Or this is in a retail environment. Hey, let's go stick this, you know, usually a lot of retail that, you know, they don't have official data centers. Very often, where their servers are running are the janitor's closet with a little extra cooling back there. Oh, guess what? Just roll one of these in there. So we're very excited about the cluster-in-a-box consideration. You're going to see more and more of these come to market. And again, it's designed to be easy and still scalable and expandable. And like all of this highly available. So we also have clustered SAN and NAS design patterns. So if you do, for example, we know that there are still people that say, you know what, I just want to have, you know, a simple two-rack system with some shared storage. And that shared storage could be iSCSI, it could be the Windows Server 2012 file server. Some cases, someone may say, hey, you know what, I've already made an investment in Fibre Channel, so maybe I'll do that. Usually not at this scale, though. It's usually something like iSCSI or a file server. So that's there as well. So when it comes to the medium configuration, now we start to think about three key design patterns. First one is continuously available over SMB storage. Second one, converged. Last one, non-converged. So if you saw me do the demo in the keynote yesterday with the scale-out file server and the tiered storage and the deduplication, I hope you got the message loud and clear. We're making a very big investment in the scale-out file server. We are very fixated on reducing cost and complexity for storage, and we are very excited about it. And from the feedback I heard from everyone since I did the keynote yesterday, you're all really happy about that, so I'm glad to hear that. So I'm going to talk about what this design pattern looks like. First of all, Hyper-V clusters, so they're running on their own nodes. The scale-out file server has its own dedicated at least two nodes because it's scale-out, so you're going to have at least two nodes dedicated to storage. And this is optimal for low-cost JBODs and takes advantage of all the resiliency capabilities we put in SMB, such as multi-channel and RDMA. So before I do that and I dive into that, I wanted to take a moment to kind of demystify and be very clear as to what we're doing in the scale-out file server, because there's still a lot of people that don't really understand what Spaces is and what the file server is and what that architecture looks like. So I just wanted to take a moment to kind of walk you through this. So let's talk about storage in general for just a moment. So have you ever looked inside a SAN head or a NAS head or a storage appliance? I mean, literally, what's in there thing? You know, if you actually crack one open and look inside, what will you find? Well, it has a couple of x86 and x64 processors. It has memory. It has network adapters. And it has storage HBAs, usually SAS. All right? Well, that sounds awfully familiar. That sounds awfully a lot like a server to me. All right, well, let's take a deeper look here. So if you look inside, again, a storage appliance head, what will you see? So if we kind of like logically divided it, the back half and the front half, what does each half do? Well, the back end basically provides multiple physical interfaces. So these are PCI cards that plug into your SAS. These are SAS controllers. And basically what this allows you to do is it pools your disks. So you have a whole bunch of physical disks out there and allows you to pool them and mirror them and RAID them and do all sorts of things. But basically, you take all those physical JBOD, all those physical disks, and then you basically pool them on the back end. The front end presents interfaces. That could be iSCSI, fiber channel over Ethernet, NFS, or SMB. Of course, they never sell you one of these. They always sell you two. And the reason why is because it's a scale-out storage appliance. And the reason why they sell you two is because if the first one goes down, that one goes down, that's no problem. The other one continues right along. That's how they say it never goes down. We have this fault-tolerant storage solution. And usually they say it leaves in pairs. Some people will go as many as four, and I think I've seen even people go as high as eight. But most people tend to use two or four. And, of course, these are clustered to give you that scale out. And then your server's attached to that storage appliance. And that can be over Ethernet, gigabit, 10 gigabit, could be over fiber channel, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, et cetera. So that's essentially what a storage appliance is. So the reason why I bring this up is let me show you what we're doing with the file server. So if you look at the 2012 R2 file server, what is it? Well, guess what? That back end, that's Spaces. That's what Spaces is. You basically have some SAS controllers, and guess what? You plug in all your disks. And with Spaces, we pool all of those disks, we create parity, we create two-way, three-way mirrors. That's what Spaces is. There's nothing magical about this. It's really cool, actually. And by the way, new in 2012 R2, that's where we're doing the tiering. So all that really wicked cool automatic tiering, that crazy IOPS performance I showed you yesterday, was one system had tiering enabled, one was using 2012 without tiering, the other one was using 2012 R2 with tiering, and that's where you saw me go from 7,400 IOPS to over 124,000 IOPS. And it's because basically the Windows Server 2012 file server had 20 physical disks, and the one with tiering had 20 physical disks, except it also had four SSDs. Those four SSDs is what gives me that crazy performance, because we do the tiering in Spaces. So that's the back end. Well, what's the front end? Oh, it's the file server. The file server presents those interfaces, iSCSI, NFS, SMB. And by the way, guess what? You can communicate via gigabit, Ethernet, 10 gigabit, 40 gigabit, or even 56 gigabit. So you're talking about, guys, better than fiber channel performance at a fraction of the cost. So this is why we've been very focused on the scale-out file server, and I just want to make sure everyone's clear is this is what the file server is about. This is what the scale-out file server is. So with that in mind, when I talk about what does a scale-out file server deployment looks like, it's Hyper-V cluster, it's SMB, and it's attached to the scale-out file server. And what's nice about it is it's flexible. So from a what's nice about this is you can scale each tier independently. If I need more compute nodes, great. If I need more storage nodes, great. Every so often I get someone who says, hey, Jeff, I want to just stick all the storage in the server. Yeah, you really don't, okay? Not necessarily. Because what happens is once you do that, you lose the ability to scale them independently. And that's actually a really important concept there. Simplicity. It's setting up file shares. It's setting up permissions. We all know how to do that. If you've ever set up a file server, guess what? You know what you're doing already. Storage is fault tolerant. Just like you would with a storage appliance, if this one goes down, guess what? The other one just continues right along. Completely transparent. The Hyper-V VMs are available, and the file server is continuously available. So I'm going to go back to this design pattern. This first design pattern, let's actually walk through this at a very prescriptive, at a layer by layer. So here's the scale-out file server. I'm using at this point, I'm just going with a 10 gig top of rack LAN. I'm also using RDMA. I'll get to that in just a moment. So I've got two 10 gigabit NICs. This is for networking. I also have two 10 gigabit NICs with RDMA. The reason why I have the 10 gigabit NICs for RDMA is that's what I'm using to access my storage. Okay? That's what I'm using for my SMB, because RDMA gives me ridiculous performance with no extra CPU utilization. That's what DMA is, direct memory access. The R is for remote. That's why we love RDMA, and we're spending a lot of time focusing on it, because it gives us ridiculous performance with no extra CPU utilization. So the two 10 gig NICs on the left are for networking. The ones on the right are for storage. On the left-hand side, I'm going to use NIC teaming and VLAN trunks. On the right-hand side, I've got SMB multi-channel and transparent failover. So what you're seeing here is there's my resiliency layer. The teaming gives me LBFO on the NIC networking side. SMB multi-channel transparent failover gives me that on the storage side. By the way, that NIC teaming, I'm going to trunk all those. I'm going to have VMLANs. I'm going to have my live migration, my cluster shared volume, my iSCSI, my host management. That's all done in there. So basically, by teaming those two 10 gigabit NICs on the left, now I just carve it up in software. It's a beautiful thing. Okay? And I know people say, wow, Jeff, two 10 gig NICs, can't I do this with 1 gig NICs? Yes, you can. You're going to have a zillion 1 gig NICs. And it just makes managing that a lot more painful. But you can if you want. Okay? But we're going for the, look, if I'm going to sell you, if we're going to give you a solution, a fast track solution, we want to make sure this thing has plenty of headroom for growth. That's why we like this solution a lot. Then we've got the parent partition, we've got Hyper-V, now we've got the virtual switches. So we've got the VM VLAN trunk, we've got live migration, we've got cluster CSV, and we have iSCSI. Now why do I have all of these up here? Why do I have iSCSI? Because I also want to be able to do guest clustering. Okay, so with iSCSI, I get the ability to do guest clustering. So remember, as I walked through that other slide that talked about all the various levels of resiliency, this is how I get all those various levels of resiliency. The one on the left isn't doing clustering, so obviously it doesn't need to be using those, whereas the guest cluster nodes are doing that. So that's kind of how we think about it in those different layers. But again, we like this because we have 10 gig on left for networking, plenty of headroom, and I can cut and carve, and I can define logical networks very quickly and easily, and the right-hand side is for all my storage. So, design pattern two, converged infrastructure. So this is basically allowing us to go now with a SAN type solution, a more traditional solution. And I'm sorry I don't have a pretty PowerPoint slide for this one at the moment. But this one, basically what you're seeing is on, whereas we had two 10 gig NICs that gave us on the left-hand side networking and storage, now we're using 10 gigabit, and I'm actually going to walk over here, converged network adapters. So you can see on the right-hand side, instead of using SMB, we're going with fiber channel over Ethernet. Okay, so that's why we're going with converged networking. We've got fiber channel over Ethernet here. And if I want to do guest clustering, you can see over here, I now have virtual fiber channel as an option. So in the other option, I was using iSCSI for guest clustering. In this option, because I have fiber channel as my storage medium, I'm using virtual fiber channel on this side to talk to my virtual SAN, MPIO, NPIV. So I'm sorry to be talking in acronyms for just a moment here. But virtual fiber channel, you can see I've got two of these because this gives me guest clustering. I have two of them, obviously, for redundancy and resiliency. MPIO, multipath IO, gives me redundancy and resiliency for my storage. NPIV is endpoint virtualization, which is what I'm using to actually make virtual fiber channel present that within the virtual machine. And then it's talking down here to my Converge network, my CNA. And again, I have a VLAN trunk where I'm able, again, to carve these up all in software. So this is a different way to actually provide another type of fast track architecture. For folks that have already a nice investment in Fibre Channel or FCOE, and if you just feel much more comfortable because that's what they've been doing, this is a great, great solution and a great architecture for that type of deployment. Then finally, we have a design pattern number three, a non-converged infrastructure. So this is basically going back to your basically essentially a very traditional infrastructure deployment. This is using traditional Fibre Channel. So in this case now, we're going with, you know, the separation of networking and Fibre Channel storage. So you can see here on the left-hand side, we've got our 10 gig NICs. And again, we like to team those because, again, then we can do all sorts of interesting things once we've teamed them here, is we can trunk those. And again, we can carve up all of that networking on the left-hand side for live migration, clustering, iSCSI, et cetera. So that's what covers the left-hand side. The right-hand side, though, now we have separate Fibre Channel switches. We have separate Ethernet switches. We have Fibre Channel up here. We've got multiple HBAs for redundancy and resiliency. Obviously, we're using MPIO to give us multipath IO. And again, we have virtual Fibre Channel that's used for clustering in here as well. So one of the things I wanted to point out is, again, three different architectures, one converged with FCOE, one very traditional with Fibre Channel, and the one I started with at the very beginning with the scale-out file server. Now, in the guest clustering for all three of these, the one thing I wanted to point out was in the first example with the scale-out file server, I used iSCSI. In the second and the third one, I used virtual Fibre Channel because I was using FCOE, and in this one, I'm using FC. In Server 2012 R2, we've also introduced a new type of guest clustering, shared VHDX. So shared VHDX allows us to provide guest clustering, to provide shared storage, without requiring iSCSI or Fibre Channel. It allows us to use an actual VHDX file. One of the reasons why we're introducing this is it actually reduces this complexity a lot. Okay? So to make guest clustering work today, it's super important because, like I said, we want to make sure we provide you that availability all the way into the VM. And so that's why we have it today. We have it with both iSCSI and Fibre Channel. But at the same time, we're trying to figure out, how do we make this even easier? So I just want to alert you that in 2012 R2, we're introducing, honestly, it's really super innovative, leading the industry, shared VHDX. Because with shared VHDX, you don't need to surface a Fibre Channel LUN. You don't need to surface an iSCSI LUN. It's literally a VHDX file. Your virtual machines attached to it within the VM, it looks like shared SAS. Obviously, we're still very early on with 2012 R2, but this is something you can certainly expect to see reflected in our future versions of FastTrack. So I just want you to know we're already thinking a version or two ahead, and it very much, we're always thinking about it in terms of our design decisions. But it's why it's there now, because guest clustering is something we know you have to have. All right. Sorry to go kind of in the weeds, but I hope this is kind of what I wanted to do today, to actually get kind of in the nitty-gritty today. So I'm hoping this is resonating with you. In terms of the management side, so I've been talking very much about the infrastructure, okay? So the compute nodes, all right? So all of the Hyper-V servers running in your cluster. Well, there's also the management part of a private cloud, okay? Because you're going to have System Center there, and you're probably going to have, you know, like probably a two-server, two-node small cluster to just run all of the management. So what does that look like? Well, we've got host clustering for System Center Service Manager, App Controller, the System Center Portal, et cetera. We also have native application HA. There are some applications that support that. And then we also have guest clustering. For example, SQL Server supports that, so we want to make sure we take advantage of that. System Center Virtual Machine Manager supports that. So for the management cluster, where you'd be running System Center to manage your private cloud, we provide you those clustering options. And again, every part of the management head is highly available as well. All right, so I'm a partner. How can I create a fast track solution? With that, I'd like to invite Lavanya Krishnan up here. Lavanya, there you go.
Thank you, Jeff. Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're enjoying our session today, and thank you all for attending. One of the questions that we keep getting is, how do we build a private cloud solution using the Fast Track program? So I'm going to go over some the steps that we actually follow in the process to get you an end-to-end private cloud Fast Track solution. Formulating a solution, building the checklist, installing the solution, and validation. Formulating a solution is where we, Jeff mentioned about the reference architecture. So as part of the Fast Track program, we build a detailed reference architecture which allows for Windows Server components and System Server components to work in a very well-integrated fashion. The partner, if you're going to build a solution, you basically first get to choose and formulate the hardware configuration based on the reference architecture. And then you build a checklist based on the different hardware configuration, and we review it for you to let you know if it is program compliant. Will this configuration work as an end-to-end private cloud Fast Track solution? As a partner, you then build the system using the physical hardware and our software guidelines that we provide in our end-to-end deployment guide. End-to-end deployment guide is a step-by-step guide that tells you how to build and how to configure the different software pieces. The final step is the actual validation itself. During validation, we do run multiple functional and stress tests to ensure that the system works end-to-end from a hardware perspective and from a software perspective. So here's the validation process as an overview. For the Fast Track implementations, it's absolutely mandatory that these validation steps are followed. And we ensure that this has happened, this is followed through, so that we could give a guarantee of the solutions and to ensure that there is consistent and reliable solutions for our customers.
Yeah, one thing to think about is we spend a lot of time and engineering resources on every release of Windows to make sure that we have a very comprehensive hardware certification. And it's something we're constantly updating because we want to make sure we're continuing to improve the qualification of those tests and to make sure that the hardware is meeting those. Failover clustering is another one, and something I always like to point out because every so often someone talks to me about how difficult failover clustering validation is. I'm like, what version of Windows are you talking about? Because going even way back to Server 2008, it was something we dramatically simplified, and every release after that has gotten easier. It's literally you walk through a wizard. It's all built into clustering. You walk through a wizard, it'll go through the entire validation process. It looks through all the compute nodes, looks all the storage nodes, and if there's a problem, it'll say, hey, you know what, something isn't properly hooked up. I don't have network connectivity on this node. You go solve it, run it again, and once it's tested and once it passes, you have a validated cluster solution. Way back in 2003, ages ago, yes, there was a lot more. It was a lot more different. None of it was automated. It was honestly a very manual process. And now it's much easier. And now it's a key part of what we do in Fast Track because obviously clustering in HA is a key part of the solution we're delivering.
Right. Thanks, Jeff. And like Jeff mentioned, the failover clustering validation is really key because before you go into production, it actually runs a series of tests on your hardware and software and makes sure that the Hyper-V and the failover clustering works as it's supposed to. And after production, the tool can still be used to run diagnosis on any of the issues that you might face. The clustered RAID controller validation is another we require if you use a third-party RAID controller. Clustered RAID controller is a relatively new shared storage RAID controller system that's available. And if you use one of those, then we basically have you run some set of validation tests for that as well. And then we also have a set of predefined validation criteria. And this basically is made up of mandatory, recommended, and optional criteria. Mandatory, as the name implies, is something that we absolutely cannot compromise on. We have to ensure that the solutions follow these mandatory criteria when they are configured. The recommended are those which are either Microsoft best practices or industry best practices and industry standards, which we absolutely recommend that the solutions adhere to. However, for business reasons or for customer needs, we basically leave it up to the discretion of the partner. Same with optional. Optional criteria are, again, best practices that are followed, but these are voluntary considerations that can be implemented at the discretion of each partner. Here are some sample mandatory criteria. And again, Jeff kept iterating about the importance of redundancy and availability. So in order to make sure that our fast track solutions are highly available at all times, we built some criteria to ensure that, you know, these are actually highly available redundant solutions. One example is that the fast track infrastructure should provide at least minimum of 2 hosts for failover clustering. Again, we also ensure that we have redundant power connectivity in your rack or blade chassis. We don't want the system going down because of power failures. Virtual machine mobility gives you the ability to move VMs from one host to another seamlessly. Again, Hyper-V live migration, which is absolutely necessary for high availability at all given times. And support for storage live migration is mandatory too. Here are some of the recommended criteria. BitLocker encrypted cluster storage. Of course, BitLocker provides very strong physical security and access controls. It prevents data leaks, so we strongly recommend that the solutions have BitLocker encrypted cluster storage. However, we do know that there are some operations and some business needs where it's not possible for BitLocker encrypted cluster storage access. And so we basically make it a recommended criteria and not a mandatory criteria just for that reasoning. Similarly, we would like standardized VM deployments to make sure that it's consistent and reliable. And so we recommend the use of VMM service templates wherever possible.
One more point on the BitLockering. What's really nice about that is, you know, depending, going back to the cluster in a box solution for just a moment, again, it can scale all the way down to that where it could literally be sitting under someone's desk. Well, in some places where, you know, physical security and physical isolation isn't something that you can guarantee, and something like BitLockering and in those environments can be really great. But we can't necessarily make that a requirement at this time, because there are plenty of cases where people say, no, it's locked in the back room. Only the manager or the person in charge has the keys, and we're comfortable with that. So that's a good example of something that's a good sample recommended criteria.
Again, I'm just going to quickly go over the optional criteria. Hyper-V application monitoring. Now, there are some virtual machines which don't support, there are some workloads which don't support clustering, failover clustering. However, Hyper-V and failover cluster feature wants to ensure that high availability is always met, even in the case of those workloads. So Hyper-V application monitoring basically gives you very lightweight applications that run on the individual VMs. And they also have, in coordination with the event logs in the individual VMs, the Hyper-V and failover cluster feature keeps monitoring the VMs, and they are able to alert in case of any potential failure so that we could do the migrations or force the migration as need be to ensure that there is always high availability. And then same with resource metering. Resource metering, for example, is basically to get you the historic data of utilization from your server. Now, if you need that information for capacity planning or any other future business need, you could actually go for the resource metering. SSDs and fiber channel disks have a lot of advantages by themselves. However, they are expensive, and not everybody could actually afford to go that route. And so we make these optional and available to you if you need to go that route. Talking about our partners, we do have a lot of different solutions from our partners. These are key partners in alphabetical order. We have solutions from Cisco, Dell, EMC, Fujitsu, Hitachi, HP, Huawei, IBM, NEC, NetApp, Nimble Storage, and the list is growing. We actually are very thankful to our partners for using our various different design patterns and coming up with a variety of solutions to suit the different needs of the different customers.
In fact, one thing we forgot to mention, I apologize for getting this, some of our partners are here. I know we've got folks from EMC, from NEC, and from a few others here in the session. So afterwards, if you have questions and like to know, we'll be going through some of these. Those folks are here and can answer some questions about the specific configurations.
So now I'm going to quickly mention some of the V3 partner solutions that we have today. Most of them are available today in the market, and some of them are going to be available very soon, starting the month of June. We have 3 solutions from Cisco. We have the FlexPod with NetApp. They have the vSpecs with EMC. And there's also the Cisco Management Integration with System Center Solution. Dell has 4 different solutions. They have the Active System 1000, Active System 800, Active System 200, and Active System 50, each catering to different software configurations and scaling up needs. EMC has their vSpecs-based solutions. They have a solution for small and medium business. They also have a high, you know, increased scale solution for their enterprise. Fujitsu has a very multiple solutions as well. They have several large and small designs based on their Primergy BX400 and CX420. Hitachi has a couple of solutions today, and that's the CB500 with HUSVM and the UCP Select Microsoft Private Cloud with CB2000.
Notice as Lavanya is going through some of these, the different form factors and sizes. It's anywhere from a half rack to a full rack to, you know, from a few dozen virtual machines to a few hundred to a few thousand virtual machines, again, based on your business needs. And that's one of the things that's really great about the Fast Track program is its flexibility.
Yes, we would really like to go over each of these solutions and provide more details, but in the interest of time, we are actually quickly going over these data by names, but these information are available in the slides for you to refer to at any given time. We have partners, some of our partners here to answer any specific question and answers that you might have. So anytime you have any question on a particular solution you're interested, please do contact me or Jeff at the end of the session. We'll be happy to direct you to the respective partner. Some of the partners also have booths at TechEd. Do go to their booths and check out our Fast Track solutions that are on exhibit. And for the partners who are not here, we would be more than happy to give you the contact information so you could follow up after the session. HPE's virtual system VS3 2.2, they have a single rack solution and a multi-rack solution, again, to cater to the different customer needs. Huawei has a small solution and a medium-sized solution, and that medium-sized solution is going to be coming soon. IBM has three different small configuration solutions. So this is, each one differs in the design pattern and the configuration. NEC has a very high efficiency 64 virtual, scaling up to 64 virtual servers. That's a medium configuration solution that will be available starting June 2003. They are focusing on the Asia market mainly, but I believe it will be available through the NEC Corporation of America as well. NetApp actually has a FlexPod with Cisco hardware. They also have an ExpressPod, which is for relatively smaller configurations that could be used for small branch, enterprises and branch offices. NetApp also has another solution, which is more like a plugin, on-command plugin for Microsoft. Our Nimble Storage has a SmartStack solution. It's a small to mid-size private cloud configuration, which can scale either from to be a very small solution all the way up to a medium configuration. And now, again, let me remind you, if you are interested in any particular solution, please do contact me or Jeff, and we'll be happy to direct you to our hardware partners who will be able to provide more in-depth details on their solutions. Now we know what the Fast Track, we went through what the Fast Track process itself is, and what are the steps, and what partner solutions are available. Now, as a customer, the next question that we keep getting is, okay, now I know what Fast Track solution I'm interested in. How do I get there? So I'm going to quickly talk about a couple of tools that will help you implement a Fast Track solution in your environment. The first one is the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, which basically works twofold. One, it assesses your current environment for the utilization numbers. It typically runs for weeks in your environment. It collects all the peaks and spikes in your environments in all the workloads. It consolidates the workload and gives you a detailed analysis on what the utilization looks like in your current environment. The second part of the tool is it helps you plan for future migrations into any of the specific Fast Track solutions that you're interested in. I'll be doing a quick demo to show you how it's done. The next tool that I'll be talking about is the VM conversion tool. In the interest of time, again, I wouldn't be able to do a demo for this tool, but this is a very valuable tool, and I have a link in my slide deck which will take you to a step-by-step tutorial and instructions on how to use the tool. The VM conversion tool is a powerful tool which helps you convert VMware VMs into Hyper-V VMs. To go on to the demo.
Oh, I'll get that.
Thank you. Can I quickly go back to the slide for a minute, please? The one thing I'd also like to mention about the map toolkit is that it has a very small downloadable size, and it's easy to download. It's free. It's an agentless tool, and it uses open source. So it's a phenomenal tool. If you haven't already tried it out, we strongly recommend that you do.
The Map Toolkit is actually a really powerful little toolkit that's been around for quite a while. Allows you to do things from, like I said, like Lavanya said, it's agentless. So, for example, it's something that you could literally install, and it'll look at all of your systems, all of your servers, for example, and it can help you determine, hey, you know what? Here's the list of physical servers I should be converting. And it'll give you that easy-to-use list. So, obviously, the longer you let it monitor, the more data can provide and more accurate data. But basically, it's agentless, so you don't have to worry about it installing anything or you needing to install anything on the servers, and kick back and let it provide you that type of report. It also does a number of things to help you, for example, in migrating to newer versions of Windows on client as well.
Thanks, Jeff. So the map tool provides various different features and functionalities for different environments, whether it's cloud, desktop, server, desktop virtualization, server virtualization, database, or usage tracking and environment analysis. Under the cloud, we actually have a Microsoft Private Cloud Fast Track specific feature in the tool. And this feature basically allows you to collect the inventory data in your current environment. It also helps you collect the performance data. And then it allows you to choose a hardware configuration that you're interested in. It could be a partner solution which you're specifically interested in which case you can get an XML file and input into the tool. The tool also provides a set of sample file solutions that you could use to just see if FastTrack solution is a good fit for your environment. Like I said, the tool typically runs for days or weeks in an environment to collect all the data. So for the purposes of this demo, I'm going to use a pre-collected environment data and start with the last step, which is running the Private Cloud Fast Track wizard. This wizard basically maps the environment data, consolidated workloads and the utilization numbers to the private cloud solution that you select and tells you whether that private cloud solution is a good match for your environment needs, whether do you have capacity for future planning and future scaling up, or whether it's better to go for another solution. So here are the pre-populated solutions that we have. The first one is a 6 to 12 node sample. You have an 8 node sample, 8 to 16 node sample, and 8 to 16 large storage sample, and 8 to 32 node sample. As you can see, in the 8 to 16, we also have a solution which is large memory, and the other one is for large storage. So depending on what you want to try, you could actually choose, and the wizard will run it for you. I'm going to choose the 6 to 12 node sample. Here, basically, you can specify the utilization settings that you want the tool to consider when you're consolidating into a private cloud fast track solution. If you want the tool to only consider 50% utilization numbers on your processor, memory, or storage capacity, you could do it. In which case, the tool will basically, when it's consolidating the workloads into your private cloud solution host, it'll only consider 50% of the utilization of the host utilization. For the purposes of this demo, I'm going to leave it as 100.
And one thing to notice is just how flexible that is. As you can see, can you go back one moment there? Is you can see in terms of processor, some people like to be a little bit more conservative. We found that cloud service providers like to run this number really high. They're fine to try and get this thing as close to 100% as possible. Many customers are like, you know what, I'd feel good about 80%. Okay, that's fine. You determine the target. The other one is the storage IOPS. Because, for example, if you're purchasing a storage solution and you know that this thing is going to provide, hey, it's got 10 disks in there, and each disk gets me about, 200 IOPS per disk, well, guess what? Now you know, okay, what percentage do I, how loaded do I really want this thing to be in storage IOPS? So it is very flexible in that regard.
And here you basically have, the next step is basically to choose which computers do you want to consider from your environment for the mapping. You could either choose a list of computers that's already there that you've collected using the tool, or you could actually input a text file from your environment data that you've collected otherwise. So I'm going to choose the pre-collected environment data that we have in the tool. And I'm going to select all the computers that we have in the environment, which is about 325. And if you notice, we have different workloads here in the environment. We have server, we have client, we have different clients, Windows 7, Windows Vista for business, we have SQL workloads, we also have Linux workloads in this. And here is a summary of the choices that we made. Here's the solution for our overview. The one we selected is a 6 to 12 node sample. Like Jeff mentioned, each solution is defined to scale. And you have a base configuration, and you have a maximum configuration. So you could start with the base configuration of any solution and go all the way up to the maximum configuration for your scaling up needs. In this case, in this particular solution that we have selected, the base configuration has a number of hosts to be 6, total IOPS of 25,000, 250 terabyte SAN storage, and a network throughput of 20. So this is the minimum configuration. If you scroll down to see the maximum configuration that this solution supports, it supports up to 12 in the maximum configuration and has a 75,000 in IOPS, 1,000 terabyte of SAN storage, and a network throughput of 10 GPS. So I'm going to click Finish. The tool basically is going to take a few minutes to run, but this will basically tell you if you use the minimum configuration, how many would you need, how many hosts would you need, and if you go with the maximum configuration, then what's the solution, how many solutions would you need, right? It basically maps it to both minimum configuration and maximum configuration, so you get an idea on what's the point in the solution that you want to start with. So it's done. Okay. So what I have here is basically the maximum configuration. When it mapped into the maximum configuration, here is what the tool came up with. And in the minimum configuration, this is what the tool came up with. Here it basically tells you that if you go with the minimum configuration, for the needs of your environment and the workload, at 100% utilization numbers on each host, you need at least 2 minimum configuration private cloud solutions. Because you needed 12 hosts. Here, it also gives you an overview of the workloads that we had, which is 325 machines, of which 314 were Windows machines, 11 Linux machines, 324 machines were successfully placed into a private cloud fast track solution, and one machine was not placed. Now, this is actually a good data point to have, because if you have any special hardware that requires a special configuration in your environment, the tool would be able to tell you if that particular fast track solution is a good fit for you or not. And now we can get a detailed report by clicking on the Generate Private Cloud Fast Track Report here. This gives us an XLS file with details on every workload, including the memory utilization, disk IOP. It gives you the CPU and the other utilization numbers that you need for your placement. Close. It basically goes to your documents folder under map. Demo 2 is the database that I have. As you can see, the latest one that we just ran is here. So this gives, the first page gives you the overview again. Of the 314 Windows machines, 250 were server machines. And then you also have 325, of the 325, only 324 were placed successfully. Now let's go to the minimum configuration. It gives you the consolidation details here in this page. As you can see, we chose 100% utilization numbers on the host, so it starts filling, the tool fills out the workloads one by one in the host. When host one is filled up, it goes to host two. And you can see the utilization numbers right here. You have the CPU utilization percentage or each workload. You have the memory utilization. You have the disk I/O utilization. And you have the disk space utilization and the network utilization. Now here, what this basically says is memory utilization of the guest exceeds available memory on the host. So as it was placing all the different workloads, when it hit 100% on the memory utilization on the host, it moved on to the next host and started placing there. Now if we scroll down, this being the base configuration with the configuration that we selected, I'm going to go all the way to show you here that the tool actually needed needed 11 hosts for your workloads. which is why in the first page it basically said one basic configuration solution is not enough for your environment. You needed more than that. You need at least two. And if you get two, you just have one host available for any of your future needs. Now, if you go to the maximum configuration, which is a higher configuration in terms of CPU, in terms of storage and memory, you could actually see that, and I scroll down, only eight hosts were used up. So eight hosts were enough in the maximum configuration for your solution, which leaves you with another four hosts for any of the future scaling up needs that you might have. Now, as you run this tool on the different solutions, you could actually choose the one that best fits your business needs based on your capacity planning and any needs that you might have. Again, like I said, this is a very, very useful tool to have. So do give it a try. It's a free tool. It's available for download from Microsoft.com site. We provide you with the links at the end of the session.
Awesome.
And then the virtual machine converter. Again, this is a free tool that's available for download. It's very small size download. It's only 4.3 MB. It provides a very quick and low-risk option for VMware customers to try out Hyper-V. And it also includes a very easily navigatable and usable graphical user interface in addition to a command line option. So you could actually use a command line option to migrate either you could plug it in your existing automation.
Yes.
And you could either do it, you could migrate all your VMs at one shot, one by one.
Well, I have to say, I've been hearing this a lot, especially in the last 24 hours, but Jeff, is there an easy way to convert my VMware virtual machines to Hyper-V? Yes. The virtual machine converter has actually been out for quite a while now. I believe it's been over a year now. And again, it is only a 4.3 megabyte download. It's a completely standalone tool. You download it, you install it. And what's nice about it is you simply pointed it in an ESX server, or you can sort it at a vCenter server, either one. It'll give you a list of the VMs that are on there. And then you basically determine, hey, I'm going to convert these, and where do you want to convert these? It's not only just the disk conversion. I want to point this out because there's actually a bunch of disk converters out there already that will already convert VMware to Hyper-V. This one is a full-on virtual machine converter. Okay, because if you do a disk conversion, then you still have to go recreate the VM. This one actually does the full VM. So if it was running on VMware and it was using two virtual processors and it had this amount of memory, and then guess what? When it converts it to Hyper-V, it'll make that Hyper-V with the same amount of processors, same amount. So it provides an entire virtual machine conversion. We also, as Lavanya mentioned, it's also scriptable, so there is an interface. And in fact, we actually released an add-on to this. So if you wanted to do this via PowerShell and do this to do a whole bunch of VMs, for example, dozens or more, you can actually script it very easily now. And again, this works with going all the way back to vSphere 4, I think all the way back to 4.0. So it's very easy to use.
Yes, and it's pretty quick in the conversion as well. What it basically does is it takes a snapshot of your VMware virtual machine to make sure that everything is captured before the migration. It uninstalls the VMware tools and installs the Hyper-V integration tools on the machine. It moves all your configuration into a temporary folder in the machine in which you're running the tool. And then it basically snapshots the machine, and using the snapshot that it already took, and brings back the VMware machine in its original state, and then converts whatever configuration it's captured in the temporary folder into your Hyper-V host. And the tool also allows you to choose at the beginning whether you want both the source and the destination VMs to be up and running, or the way you want one to be on and one to be off, and the tool actually takes care of it for you. So if you, for example, had chosen that you want both the VMs to be up and running, when the tool is done, you'll have your VMware VM running on the VMware host. You'll also have the corresponding Hyper-V VM running on the Hyper-V. And the link here gives you a very detailed step-by-step tutorial on how to use the tool, both from a graphic GUI perspective as well as from a command line perspective. Now, we've come to the end of our session. Again, we'd like to thank you all for taking time to attend. We hope you found it useful. In recap, why Microsoft Private Cloud? Speed to deployment, reduced risk, and flexibility and choice. As you can see, we have numerous solutions from our various key partners, and they're all here working hard to find out the right solution that meets your need. Do check out their booth. Go talk to them. There are a lot of our partners here in the session. We'll be happy to give you contact information of each and every one of our partners for you to follow up later as well. In review, here are some of the useful links that we kept talking about throughout the session. The first link gives you all the Fast Track content, which includes the reference architecture, end-to-end deployment guide, which has the step-by-step instructions. We also have the download map toolkit link and the Microsoft VM Converter toolkit. Again, here are a list of key partners. We'd like to thank our partners as well at this time. And here is the information on our partner booths. Do check them out and check out the Fast Track solutions that are on exhibit.
And when you do talk to your partners, and if you are considering buying a new cloud infrastructure, ask your partner, can I see the Fast Track solutions? Please do ask them, because you know what? These are probably sitting there readily available, and all you have to do is make sure you're interested, and they'll be happy to pull those up. And all of our major OEM partners have Fast Track solutions. So thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the week here at TechEd.
Thank you.